Please take your seats. School is now in session.
Welcome to Homeschooled Podcast.
Homeschooled.
The Homeschooled Podcast. Why? Because he was homeschooled.
It's time to document the journey. Welcome back to Homeschooled Podcast. I'm Augustino Zoida. It's great to have you guys with us. We really appreciate it. We know you have a lot of options for podcasts, so you're here, and that means the world to us. Welcome back. Very exciting episode. Super glad to have on a person that I met earlier this year. I think it was in May. I was there in May, right?
Yeah, it was May, yeah.
When it was still before summer, which for me was still hot. It was still
roasting. Yeah, here summer is when you can't breathe. It's hell.
what is it outside right now?
It's like 50 degrees and like 80% humidity.
So 50.
You literally drive around like four times around the block to just get one space closer to the door. That's how bad it is.
So that's Fahrenheit, right? 50.
Oh God, I don't know the difference.
I don't. Because 50 degrees is like is pretty cold, so here today it was like 100 degrees. I don't know what that would be for you guys.
Yeah, I don't know what that is either.
But anyway, I the whole time I was there, I couldn't get down the Fahrenheit thing either. But it's great to see you again. I would like to take this moment to remind everybody that I will be in Las Vegas, Nevada, August 12th through the 8th. I'm doing the whole week at Stratosphere. That'll be a lot of fun. Actually, I'm working with Jimmy Schubert that week. It's him and I together. That'll be fantastic. Lots of fun. Me and Schubert in Vegas. And then right after that, I will be returning to Paso Robles, California, August 12th. And then August 14th, I will be in Boston, Massachusetts. So make sure you guys go to homeschooledpod.com. Click on tour to get your tickets. Gail, welcome. Welcome to the show. Just a little brief, let everybody know who you are. You own, promote, book, do everything for the Laughter Factory, which is the club I did in Dubai when I was there.
Yes, 25 years. 25 years and we're still going strong.
I saw that in your June tour was your 25-year anniversary.
Yes, it was. It was our 25th anniversary.
You had out Mike Marino?
That's right. We had Mike Marino. We had an incredibly funny Irish guy called Mike Rice. Oh, my goodness. I need to remember who the first act was. You know what? It all becomes a blur when you've got people coming and going all the time. But the whole tour was brilliant.
And who do you have next month in July? Well, it is July now.
A guy called Nick Guerrera.
Oh, Nick Guerra, that's the guy I sent you.
Well, yes. There's so many of the people that you recommended that I booked.
Oh, fantastic.
And we've got a great comic from America here at the moment called Joe Larson.
Okay.
And then we've got an Israeli lady, Candy Abelson, and a guy from Poland called Peter Szymoski. Oh, I can't believe I got his name right.
Oh, nice. Exciting. I should... also, I just remembered there's a comedian out here, an Iranian female comedian. Maybe I should send her your way too. She's pretty funny.
Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, that's exciting. Congratulations. 25 years. I know that.
We had a guy and a Greek guy when you came, didn't we?
Yeah, you guys had George.
George Zach. He was incredible, wasn't he?
You know what? I had such a fun time with both those guys that I was paired up with. I was a little nervous at first because I was like, you know, first of all, it was my first time ever that far away from home. And for 2 weeks, I mean, the most I've gone out of America is Canada. Like, I've played in Canada and that's about it. But so that was my big first overseas tour. And I was a little nervous that I wouldn't know anybody. And that was my first time meeting Ari and George. Yeah.
He was a funny guy as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, he you know, I still to this day think about, even though it wasn't even that long ago, several months ago, a couple months ago, and I still kind of miss it. I miss hanging out with those dudes all the time. We got along like we knew each other forever, you know?
Yeah. No, it was a great tour, wasn't it? I mean, the yacht party was the highlight, wasn't it? Better comedy. We all hired a yacht, didn't we? Because it's in a recession at the moment, you could, like, hire a yacht. What did we pay, like? $50 or something each.
Something like that, yeah.
private yacht. It was ridiculous, wasn't it?
We certainly did party. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You know, us three guys were all, I'd say we were all kind of like the same age. I had a great time with them. They're all really funny. They all love talking about stand-up comedy, which is something that I love talking about, you know. Not only our own stuff, but like famous comics bits. We're like, hey, have you ever heard this one? Like, just the whole day we were doing that with each other. And the yacht party was awesome.
The guy from Estonia, I just thought, well, he wouldn't know so much about comedy. And he was only really young, wasn't he? But he was like an encyclopedia, wasn't he?
Yes, he's a little younger than I am, and I noticed that he followed a lot of American comedy. Like, he knew everyone I knew, and he listened to a lot of podcasts of all, like, you know, he knew me already before I met him, because I was on Joey Diaz's podcast a lot, and that was one that he had listened to a lot, so he already knew who I was. And I guess Ari's, like, kind of really well-known in Estonia. Like, he's, like, the biggest comic there.
I've got a couple of guys from... Well, this guy's from Poland. He's like huge in Poland that I've got at the moment. And before that, we had a Romanian, same thing, just going out around Romania doing theatre tours. But the standard that's coming out of there is incredible, isn't it? Considering they've not been doing it for so long.
Yeah. And I remember Ari was telling me, you know, we had a pandemic. And we all dealt with it in different ways. But he went a year without doing stand-up comedy in English.
Oh, yeah. He struggled a bit. Didn't he? He forgot his English, but then he got into it the next night.
Yeah, by night two, he was already like coming back to himself. But I can't imagine that, because I know the struggles that I dealt with from coming out of the pandemic and not being able to get on stage as much as I was used to. Yeah. And that was kind of like the big epic comeback, was me going to Dubai. That was like the official, like, things are coming back. You know, I had been working since February. I had already been gigging, you know, since February. But going to Dubai was like the official, like, the world is opening again. I'm able to, without a vaccine at the time, go to another country and perform. And that was a huge deal for me. So I was super excited about it. Very excited to get back up on stage. And you guys had a social distance crowd, and you kept telling me, like, normally it's, you know what I mean, like, we wish we could have people more packed in close together, but your guys' version of social distance was not as bad as ours. That was a blessing to perform there. When I saw your rooms, and it was like old memories of a great packed comedy club and people just wanting to laugh and have a great time. It was wonderful.
We've managed to go down even further since then now, so the gigs have kind of gone up a gear, because we've got rid of the tables and we've got everybody more packed in now. But
really?
It's still that 4 meters from the front is the difficult part, isn't it, for the comics, I think. You know, it's that big gap. I think once that goes, it'll all go back to being pretty much a normal vibe. Just another few more weeks, I think. I'm hoping that things will change the next month. We've got everybody vaccinated here, so
yeah.
I can't say why not. Most of the people that are coming here are vaccinated, so I'm hoping that we can start packing people back in again. Are they packed back in America now?
You know, can you believe it? We're going back into another lockdown in Los Angeles. In Los Angeles. So, yeah, the Comedy Store and all the comedy clubs are pretty much back, you know, indoors at full capacity pretty much. But then they just announced that we all have to start wearing masks again. Started 2 days ago.
Oh, dear.
Do they still make you guys wear masks indoors?
We don't have to wear... Well, you wear them when you walk in, but once you've got to the table or the chair, you can take it off.
Okay, so yeah, that's pretty much where we were. And then June 15th till now, we've been fully open. Like, no masks needed, nothing. It was pretty much back to normal. But starting Sunday, they said, you got to wear your mask again. We're going backwards. And then what's the rule right now to go to Dubai? Because when I had to go, all you needed to do was have the COVID test 72 hours before. So is that still...
But what's been really good about it is that I'd always been booking everybody out of England, Ireland and Europe. And because the flights from America are quite a lot more expensive, but I haven't had a choice. I've just had to bite the bullet on it. But I'm loving working with the American acts. It's just really added a new flavour to the club. It's great. You know, I will definitely carry on booking Americans. You know, when the UK opens, I'll obviously go back to booking some of our regular acts. But, you know, I'll definitely have one American act on the bill every month. It's just that little bit more energy, I think.
Yeah. What about being vaccinated? Do they want you to be vaccinated now to go there or no?
No, they don't care at the moment. And, you know, they're pretty, you know. The thing is that Dubai is a tourist and a business destination. So they need to have people coming and going. You know, they can't afford to just shut down. So I think they're just playing it by ear. Although they have shut down, you know, with India because of the Delta variant. They've been quite strict about that.
Okay, right, yeah. I remember when I was there that you were telling me that they were thinking of making all your comedians have to be vaxxed to come.
Well, they've done it with all the local entertainers, and we've been really lucky they've given us an exemption because some of the comics that we've had coming in, like Mike Rice last month, was really young. You know, so I don't remember who the first act was now. It was Corey Michaelis. Do you know him?
Oh, no, I don't.
No, he's American. But the younger acts can't get that vaccination, can they, in some countries?
Here you can.
Can you get it when you're younger there? America's done a great job, like Britain, of rolling it out. But he was based in Barcelona, and he couldn't get the vaccination, like, last month, even if he wanted it. So we were lucky we got an exemption.
Oh, wow. Because I remember, that was one of the things I wanted to talk to you about, because one of the shows that I did, some people from, I guess, should we say the government, or what do you...
tourism. Yeah, they came in, watched it. They had a fantastic time.
I know. That's what you were... I remember you were telling me that they...
You need to get Biden, and you need to get Boris Johnson. They all need to start watching comedy.
Yeah. Because we did the show, and I remember they had a really good time that night, and they came and joined us afterward at, like, the after party at the table and had drinks, and I remember you saying that they were thinking about making all your comedians be vaxxed, just like all the local entertainment, but they had such a great time, they kind of gave you an exemption.
Yeah.
That was really cool.
That
was funny. I thought it was funny how you told us afterwards. You're like, yeah, they were in there.
Good job that you're all funny, wasn't it? Otherwise, maybe laughing.
Yeah. If we didn't do a great job, who knows?
Comedy in Dubai.
Okay, so let's talk about you a little bit. So, yeah, you just celebrated 25 years of the Laughter Factory, and I know that your background is DJing. You still DJ, though, sometimes, don't you?
They still dig me out and dust me off when they can't find someone else. Yeah, they get grandma out. I still do weddings and corporate gigs and things like that. I don't do the cool stuff anymore.
How did you get into that? How did you get into DJing?
I was 17. I was working as a waitress in a cocktail bar.
Really?
And they just said, yeah, do you want to have a go at DJing? There's a box of records. That was in the mid-80s. There was no girl DJs around at that time, so I was so lucky I got that break. I was able to go, you know, travel all around the world and just have some amazing experiences. So I was very lucky that night.
So in the beginning, what did you do? You just, like, went and had a go at some of those records that were lying around there?
Records. I mean, in those days, records were so expensive. It would be like $8 for one record. And you needed hundreds and hundreds of them. You know, it was a huge investment. So I got to learn with somebody else's records. And then I just started to slowly buy my own. And I developed a collection. You know, so it was great timing, good luck, I have to say.
From the beginning, were you just kind of like playing around with the records? Like, would you make your own beats out of the records that you had there?
I was just playing the records that I had. You know, there wasn't that much technology around then. And it was jazz funk. It was before house. It was before house music broke. And I was mainly playing jazz funk. Then I got to play more commercial stuff because I sold out in 1985. If I got told if I'd play Madonna and Wham and stuff like that, I could triple my money.
Oh, really?
I sold out in 1985 and went commercial. But that was great because then I got to travel and go to I've worked in, I think I counted 11 different countries. So it took me 7 years of traveling around the world, about 6 months a year in every country that I visited and played in. So it's good because I got to actually live in the place, you know, and really understand the place as opposed to just like flying in and flying out.
Yeah.
That's what's good about the way that you come to Dubai as well, that you're plugged into it for 10 days, aren't you? You're going to work, you're part of the system, you're part of the community.
Exactly.
Whereas if you become really famous, you miss out on a lot because a famous DJ or a famous comic, they fly in, do their show, and fly back out again. So it's,
right.
It's travel, but it's not travel.
And you know what else? If you're like a tourist and you want to go to a place, you're going to ask recommendations and you're going to go online and look, where should I go? And you're going to go to a lot of tourist attractions. But when you're a comic, first of all, you always meet other comics and they always tell you the good places to go. You know, they're like, I'm thinking about going to that place. They're like, that's a tourist attraction. You know, go check out that other one. The view's better and you don't have to pay. You know what I mean? Like things like that.
Especially with a city like Dubai as well, because it's probably similar to New York, I'm guessing. It's so expensive that if you don't know where the deals are and you don't know, you know, your way around it, it's very, very difficult, isn't it? It's a very expensive place. Alcohol's very expensive. It's like over $10 a beer.
Yeah, they charge, they really charge it's a big tax, right?
Yeah, a lot of it's in tax.
And they know what they're doing.
Do you call it that in America? They call it a sin tax over here. Cigarettes, alcohol, soft drinks, anything that's unhealthy.
No, it's not. No, like right now out here, if you get a beer in California, if you get a beer, it's like $6 to $10 if it's a really, really, really good beer. But that's that's a really good beer. A typical, it's like $6, and that's kind of expensive. If you go to other places in the country, you know, Massachusetts or something like that, you might find a bar that's got a $3 beer.
Right, yeah. You see, everyone here now drinks in happy hour. Nobody pays the full price anymore. They just drink in happy hour and go home at like 9 o'clock or something.
Yeah, Ari and I found a couple of happy hours there, and we're like, this is the place we'll drink. You know, a couple of the hotels we stayed in had a great happy hour. We were just, okay, so we're going to drink between 4 and 6, take a nap, do the show.
it was loads of fun, that tour. Yeah, definitely.
Oh man, that one was a fun one. And then I was also going to ask you. So you're touring around doing DJing. Where was you started in the UK?
Yeah, I did. I started when I was 17 years old. But I went off traveling when I was 20, 21. I was unusually young to go off on my own. I mean, it sounds a bit crazy now. I mean, I went from my mother's house in a car, a Volvo, up to the north of Norway. I think it's called the Arctic. Yeah, it's the Arctic Circle. And I did 6 months, a different month in a different city and town, all the way up there. And then 6 months coming back. But it was funny because English people went over there as kind of like cheap labor. DJing in the 80s wasn't a cool job like it is now.
Really?
It was a crappy job that nobody wanted. And the Norwegians didn't want it. Same when I went to Switzerland, they didn't want to do it. They would all be fighting over each other to do that job now. But in the 80s, it wasn't a cool job. You were considered like a bit of a nerd or a bit of a loser. So, you know, so the money was good because it wasn't an attractive deal at that time in those countries anyway. So I got very lucky because I got very well paid in Norway to go up. But obviously you would, to go up to the Arctic Circle. I mean, it was minus whatever and neat chains around my wheels and neat antifreeze in the car. And, you know, you really had to, other DJs helped me to get up there. You know, you wouldn't just work it out yourself. You'd just probably be dead.
Yeah.
There's no mobile phones then either. Can you believe I went up there, up into the Arctic Circle, no mobile phone in a 14-year-old car.
When you were 21?
Yeah.
Yeah, that is a little... That is a little scary. Yeah, I think I went on my first airplane when I was like 17, and I was by myself, and it was, you know, it's everything you do for the first time by yourself is quite an adventure, isn't it?
I mean, it's like now I live alone, and I'm a bit rubbish at doing relationships because I spent all those years by myself, and I became too self-sufficient. everybody says how good it is, but the trouble is you do get so self-sufficient that you really don't need anybody else. And then you start being in your own little world, you know?
Yeah. I think it was Jim Carrey that said when you're finally comfortable with being alone, that's when everybody wants to come and ruin it. Or something along the lines of that.
Yeah. And then I went to Switzerland, St. Moritz, which was all the real A-list. It was, you know, the Onassises and the Kennedys and Benetton and the guy who owned Fiat cars. So I'd never met those kind of people before, you know. So that was a bit of an eye-opener. But then I spent a year working for the richest man in the world as his personal DJ. That was the Sultan of Brunei.
Wow.
Cairo, Indonesia. I was the first DJ in communist China and the first one over the Berlin Wall. It should have been a German, and it wasn't. It was me.
Really?
It was a gig that nobody wanted. And I took vinyl over there. It was quite interesting because the DJs had been playing on tapes, you know, old-fashioned cassette tapes. And to mix them up, they would get a thick blue Bic pen and speed the reel of the cassette up or slow it down. I mean, genius. It's amazing what humans will do.
Yeah.
But when I took vinyl in there, the place on the first night was just packed with DJs all watching what I was doing. That was in 1989, the end of 89. It was freezing.
So these are the guys that are, you know, winding it up with like a pen or something like that. And then you're there and they all wanted to come and watch how you did it with the records.
Yeah, because I don't think they'd ever seen vinyl. They obviously knew about it.
Yeah.
But it wasn't available in that market. And it's quite funny, the town that I went to produced Leipzig. It was the first place I played over the wall when it came down, and it produced the highest paid DJ in the world, Paul van Dyk.
Wow.
So I'd love to meet him and tell him about the pens, because I'm sure that's before his time.
Where's your favorite country that you've visited during that time when you were DJing?
Indonesia by far.
Really?
Boost of a town. It's not much to look at when you get there. I wouldn't recommend it on holiday, but to live, it was the most fun place I've ever lived. It was just mental.
What made it fun?
Cairo as well. I like fast places with millions of people. I like a bit of insanity. When I was in Switzerland, it was beautiful, but I was bored out of my head. A bit the same in Norway.
Yeah. What made it fun for you? Just that it was fast and there's a lot of people?
A lot of people, fast, lots of different music scenes, interesting gay scene, you know, just lots of different types of people. I like that. I like different conversations, different opinions, different attitudes.
Yeah, that's really cool. I love a place that has a nightlife.
Yeah, exactly.
I really could never live in a place that has no nightlife. And although, on the other hand, when I get older, I start to appreciate the daytime a little bit more. I start to appreciate the sun a little bit more and the activities you can do in the sun. But I gotta have, like, if you have a town that closes at 10, I can't live there.
Well, you see, for me, I get bored chatting to the same people all the time. And I'm still, at the moment, I still miss that bar chat where people sit around the bar and you get talking to strangers. And randoms, and you're not going to like everybody. You're going to get some weirdos, but that just goes with it, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I'm with you. I miss that too. It's one of my, it's one of the greatest things of the world is to, you know, wherever you're from, that's like kind of something they're proud of is their old bar. Like there's that bar that's been around forever, or it's just the nightlife, and it's something. I mean, there's so many songs about it. I mean, Piano Man is one of the most famous songs in the world. And it's one of my favorite songs of all time because I'm an entertainer, and it just rings so true of the piano man who's singing for all the drunks, but they're all regulars. He knows them all, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, we have that at the club, you know, we have people that come in. We're lucky here because we're the only club in town.
Yeah.
So we've got 80% regulars.
Oh, that's great.
They don't come, but they'll come two, three times a year.
Yeah, well, because you have new acts every time.
Yes, yeah, we try and keep it fresh for them. We have to because they're coming so frequently.
Mm-hmm. See, out here, I feel like this, the lineups of comedy shows are like the same. every night it's the same. But then again, it's different audience. Like, people come to LA to go to the world famous Comedy Store because they're hoping to run into, you know, Bill Burr or, you know, Joe Rogan or something. So it's like they got to keep having those lineups. But there, you have the same people and you can constantly bring in new acts, which
I'm the opposite. I get zero tourists through my door, even though we're a tourist town. Wow. They just don't want the comedy show when they come here. I have no idea why. All we ever have is residents. I don't get a tourist from one year's end to the next.
That's so interesting. It's like, I think I saw somewhere that Dubai is like the number on the list, number one on the list of a destination for travelers. Like, that's where everybody's dream is to go.
Yes, it's a real popular hub because they've done a great job. I mean, it is very glamorous. The good thing about Dubai as well is that you're just so safe. My comics are like children for me when I have them for 10 days, and I never worry about my children. They can be out at 3 in the morning, they can be drunk. You can't end up in the wrong part of town here. You know, you could be in the worst part of town, and you're going to be 100% safe.
Yeah. I noticed that. It was pretty safe, you know.
That the food's a bit more crappy if you grab something to eat, but you know, that's the only difference between the worst part of town and the best part of town. It's you don't have to take care about, and the cab drivers are so honest. They take you straight there. They're not driving you around, mm-hmm. and you don't end up with food bills. You know, if you've got a diamond studded Rolex on, yeah. and you fall asleep somewhere, you're going to wake up with it still on. You know, it's very, very safe.
I got around pretty well in all the cabs. It was so cheap for me to travel in the cabs. It was like,
it's English, so it's easy to move.
Yeah,
I know when I've been on holiday a couple of times, and I always try and make sure I stay in the center of town, because if you start negotiating local taxis, it just turns your trip into a stress, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Taking the wrong direction, or you don't have to worry about that here, and I think that makes life and it makes my life easy, because if there wasn't good taxis and a good service here, I would end up ferrying everyone. I'd be like mum picking everyone up in the middle of the night.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, out here, Uber was sort of our solution to the very, very expensive taxis, and it had been for the past couple of years. But recently, this year, like ever since after the pandemic, it is very expensive to Uber now.
Oh.
Very, yeah. It used to cost me from my house, which I live in Studio Cities, which is probably like 10 to 15 minutes from Hollywood, right? So from my house to go to LAX airport, yeah. it used to be $20 to $30, and now it's $75.
Oh, no. Because I thought the whole thing about Uber, particularly in the UK, similar, it stops a lot of loneliness because, you know, particularly like myself, a single woman, if I couldn't afford the cab fare, I couldn't go out at night. I'd feel isolated.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It was a great solution for the drivers to make money. You know, you could be your own boss and make your own schedule, and then people could get around, and it really helped with drunk driving, I think. Because why drink and drive when an Uber was $10 to get me home? And you can call an Uber and it would show up in 2 minutes. But now it's so expensive, and I think it partially is because a lot of people moved from the big cities in the pandemic, so there's not really drivers here anymore. So now it takes maybe 12 minutes to get a car, at least, and there's not as many drivers, so the rates are just higher.
Right. Oh, that's a shame.
I was just in Seattle this last week. I did a show in Seattle. That was a lot of fun. But I could not get an Uber to come pick me up from the airport. And I'm calling an Uber, and, you know, they're calling me, and I'm like, yeah, I'm over here. And they go, well, we're not allowed to go to that side of the airport. I'm like, what are you talking about? There's tons of taxi cabs right here. You know, and so finally I canceled it, and I got in one of the taxi cabs, which ended up being a little bit cheaper than the Uber would have been. So I think we're getting back to...
That's the end of it then. If you can get a normal taxi, you just might as well do that.
Yeah, I think that we're kind of going back to that.
Oh no, there's so many changes at the moment, isn't it? It's difficult trying to navigate. Everything's going to be better off or worse. I just want to get back on the dance floor. I'm not Madonna. It's only on the dance floor I feel free. Can't do that yet in Dubai. No
we
dancing.
We found some dance and a little bit, a sort of club atmosphere there. We were, what was the one show that we were doing? What was the name of the hotel? There was like kind of a dance club in the lobby. They had the...
That was definitely illegal, so I better not mention it.
No, it wasn't illegal. No, it wasn't. It wasn't a dance... I think it used to be a dance club, but it wasn't really active because of COVID, so they were just kind of selling it as a bar. But they had a live DJ in there.
Okay, right. That was probably Lockstock.
Yeah, I think maybe it was Lockstock, but it was the one that was in the the lobby of... Like, you have to take an elevator up to it.
Yes, that's the one. That's Lockstock.
Well, we had some fun in there, and there was music, so people just kind of got up and danced. That was fun.
I know, it's like illegal dancing parties, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like the happy police, or whatever you want to call them, and they're slapping you on the legs if you do something wrong, you know?
Well, it's like dirty dancing all over again, you know?
Yeah. Don't put baby in the corner.
That was a funny night when we were in that club, because I think Ari had met someone. And then, you know, George was meeting people all the time, but I was there.
Yeah.
You know, I'm married, but I'm there just having a good time. Again, I love the nightlife. If I could sit with comics after the show and eat or drink and hang out and talk until 1 in the morning, I love it. So we were there. I'm having a good time. And then this girl comes up to me and grabs me, and she pulled me over to their table, and I sat down, and I go, they must have been at the show, because there was a lot of people at the show there, and they, oh, we saw your show, you're so funny, blah, blah, you know, that type of thing. So I sit down at the table, and I go, like, how did you guys like the show? And they're like, what show? And I go,
oh, no.
Weren't you just at my show? Isn't that why you wanted to say hi? And they're like, no. And then
she just thought you were cute. What a bonus.
So the girl was like, no, I just wanted to meet you. And you know what's funny is like she was Russian, and so was my wife. So then George, the Greek, as he's known on Instagram, comes over and he whispers in my ear. And he's like, he goes, if you want to pursue this, I can keep a secret.
Oh, he's so funny, isn't he?
I had such a laugh, and then. And then we left, and I think the next day we were doing a show, and it was me, him, and Ari in the green room, and he goes, I would like to make an announcement that Agostino is a good boy.
Oh, that's so cute.
Yeah.
So cute.
Yeah.
He just split up with his girlfriend before he came over here.
That's right.
So I think he was looking for trouble, and I think trouble was looking for him as well.
Well, I think he found it, yeah. So... How did you, okay, so DJing, touring the world, how did you finally land in Dubai?
Well, it was funny, I was in Cairo before, and it became a bit unsafe for Westerners. I think it must have been 92, because I arrived here in 93. I had to move. I didn't want to move. I love being in Cairo. And I came to Dubai, and I found it so boring. It was like a complete one-horse town, like nearly 3 years ago. There was nothing here. But I was earning a fortune DJing, so I couldn't leave. I was so bored. And because I couldn't leave, I couldn't, you know, afford to leave. But that's how we ended up. I met Duncan, my business partner.
Right.
And he's a professional drummer. And we started the Laughter Factory just for something to do, for something to watch, because we were going insane here. And then Dubai became this, like, it just exploded, a bit like Vegas out of the desert.
Yeah.
And then, like I said, and it became so much fun. And now I love living here. I think it's one of the best places in the world, because you've got all the advantages of a major city, but you've got the safety of a village. And I just love that combination.
Yeah, I did find it very safe, very clean. So you and Duncan must have obviously been stand-up comedy fans for you to go, let's think of some entertainment because we're bored. And why stand-up? You must have been fans.
Yeah, well, we weren't massive fans. I mean, I'd spent all those years traveling, and when I traveled, there was no television, and I sound like grandma now, no television and no internet. All I had was books. So it wasn't like I developed a taste for stand-up while I was traveling, but I knew a guy who had a club in Manchester, so he put me in touch with... we had two circuits then. I don't know if you did in America. There was one called the Alternative Circuit and one called the Mainstream Circuit.
Yeah.
And it was kind of alternative because it was an alternative to sexist, racist jokes. So we put the guy, we went with a guy obviously from the alternative circuit, and they all write original material. The mainstream comics just all just tell the same jokes. I don't know if it was the same in America.
It sort of still is. It sort of still is.
The mother-in-law gags and yes, but they all tell the same jokes. Whereas I know on the UK circuit, if somebody steals someone's material, it's like somebody's committed murder. It's the worst thing that you could possibly do.
Yeah, well, you know what's funny? That's true out here too. But you'll have guys that were real ready to kill each other over someone stealing their joke, and neither one of them will stop and go, guys, this is a joke that is so common. Like, not only you two have it.
Yeah.
Like, they're so blind to how, I don't know what word you want to use, hacky or obvious the joke is, that they just want to, you know, they would still kill each other over a stolen joke, but the joke was, like, not even brilliant. It wasn't even...
Do you know where I get that in Dubai? They all go, oh my God, it's so hot. I stepped outside and it's like being in a sauna. And in the summer, obviously in the winter, it's beautiful here, but in the summer months, it's like nearly every comic does that joke. It's really good. I did it. Never mind, forced of it.
Oh, man. Yeah, I'll bet, you know. But yeah, you got the mainstream. Although, you know what's funny? In America now, our mainstream is the alt.
Right.
I think, like, you know, we had alt and mainstream also, but at some point alt became the mainstream when podcasts got so famous and you found out about these, you know, Joe Rogan's podcast is probably the biggest in the world, and he introduced you to so many comedians who are really creative and really stepping outside of the creative box, and they kind of showed you that the guys that were mainstream are kind of all doing the same stuff and talking about the same things, and, you know, racial, and, you know, it's easy material.
As well, with just before the lockdowns, when we were bringing people from England, and they could get away with more stuff here because of the whole woke thing in England is huge, and they could have more freedom of speech here. In the Middle East, we don't censor our acts at all. They have more freedom here than they do in the UK. How bizarre is that?
Yeah, that is bizarre. And in some ways, in more than America, which is apparently the free country, you guys had a little bit more, I noticed a little bit more freedoms in some way.
Yeah, it's very strange, isn't it, how that one's panned out? Because I used to be on tenterhooks 25 years ago because, you know, Dubai was very different then. It's a lot more conservative, and I was always worried that somebody would walk in and we'd get shut down and there'd be a problem. But nothing ever happened, you know, and I'd try and censor comics. It'd be a waste of time the first year or 2 years. Oh, better not say this or that. And then I just gave up. I just went, no, just let them do what they want. And it's worked out fine.
Yeah. You know, I just did Portland and Seattle. And, man, they are easily offended. They're quite...
Is that the woke brigade?
I suppose you can call them woke.
The latte sipping crowd.
Yeah. I mean, nothing. I had a lot of fun there. Majority of the audience was a lot of fun. But certain things they would get really sensitive on. Like, you know,
right.
I mean, I have some controversial material that I couldn't even get to because they were, they were getting tight on me with the light stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So, but then again, you know what it is? Afterwards, I would talk to people and they would go, you know, don't listen to them. We loved that thing. You know, they were telling me they were liking it. So I think people just feel uncomfortable to laugh out loud. They don't want everyone else to know that they thought it was funny in case they get offended.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's the big problem now that we've got with comedy clubs, isn't it? People are a bit, you know, that hasn't come over here yet, but I'm sure it'll come eventually.
Yeah.
People are still, you know, just laughing at anything and having a good time, you know. But as well, we've got a lot of people in doing English in their second language as well, you know. So I think that they're just exploring the whole scene, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I think the only thing
for a lot of them,
close to what we're talking about that I noticed in Dubai was only caused by the comedians. Like, the only awkwardness because I think that was probably one in a long time comics that you've had from America. It's probably been a long time since you had an American.
Yeah, definitely.
I think it's that...
We didn't book American acts before because we just couldn't afford them.
Mm-hmm.
We used to book a lot of Canadian acts. We had like Russell Peters and Sammy in the club, and you know, we used to get some really good Canadian acts, but they would be coming in and out of the UK. They would have moved to England because the scene, and I think they could get more money in England. But a lot of Canadian acts moved to the UK.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the one problem I found in myself that I made the room awkward, I think, was in the first show, is I got in my own head thinking I couldn't say everything because I was going to offend them, you know,
especially if
you see somebody in the crowd who's like full burka, and it's a little intimidating.
I know.
But after that...
They're always the ones laughing the hardest, aren't they?
It's exactly what I noticed. So after the first show, I saw that they were laughing the hardest. They were like, you know, a woman in a full burqa, you're doing dick jokes, and they were laughing at it.
I know. It's funny, isn't it?
I even told Nick Guerra, who's coming to do your tour this month, I told him of my mistake. I was like, don't think that they, you know, don't put it in your head that you can't do the stuff that you want to do.
Yeah, they love a bit of fills, don't they?
Yeah. I mean, as long as you're not offending the government or, what I mean? They certainly did have a good time. I've freed myself to do me, to be myself.
Yeah. No, it was great. I mean, it was really... Yeah, and what's really good is that we're getting more and more, obviously, American acts now. I'm only booking American acts from now on. And they're all talking to each other, and like you say, you're able to, I mean, I can't do that. I'm not a comic. You know, you're able to explain to the other acts that are coming through what the pitfalls are, what to watch out for. The big one really, I think now as well, is to slow down a bit, whereas that was never an issue before.
Mm.
But now acts that slow down definitely have a better gig, just because a lot of the audience, it's their second language.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's a good point too.
You wouldn't really know it, but the acts that do slow down, that don't go too quickly, just have just such a better show.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you know, you got to hear it. That's why you got to listen to the audience and find your timing. And for the language, that's a great point that people should keep that in mind. But either way, when you go too fast, it's not a better performance. It's always better when you take your time.
We had a phase just before COVID of filming the shows, and there was quite a lot of acts that slowed down and were having such better gigs. They carried on slowing down when they went back to England, and it improved their gigs back in the UK.
Yeah.
So it just shows that a lot of comics must just be going too fast, mustn't they?
Yep. When I left, last time I saw you, you were saying that you want to do comedy. Like, you're hosting these.
Oh, I did a few jokes the other night.
You did it again?
Yeah. No, I've got to, because I'm completely paranoid in case... Well, I want to make the hosting better, but just in case somebody, like, tests positive, which, as time's going on now, that's looking more and more unlikely that that's going to happen. But it would be just if you got your guard down. So I would just want to try and get 10 minutes.
Just
so that, you know, in case somebody tests positive, I can get up there and fill a bit of a gap until we get another comic on the plane. Because obviously I can't replace a comic, get them tested and booked on a flight in 24 hours.
Yeah, of course not. Of course not. You couldn't even get them, a test results in 24 hours.
Exactly. So we're quite vulnerable. The business model's quite vulnerable like that.
I think it's a great idea. When you told me at the time, and I was like, I hope that she keeps doing it. So I'm glad that you did it again. Because, what if somebody can't make it? You got it. Yeah, just build 10 minutes. I mean, like, for example, if you had me and George, and then let's say Ari couldn't make it, you could have easily done 5-10 minutes, and George and I definitely could have filled the rest of the time between the two of us.
That's my plan if anything, you know, goes wrong. And plus, it'll make me host a bit better if I've got a few jokes. All the stuff that I've written is all about Dubai, you know, about ladies' nights and just stuff that's specific to this region. Everybody's full of.
Well, that's but that's who makes the best host is talking a bit about the local stuff that everybody can enjoy, and I think you should do it. I mean, you love comedy. You should do it.
Yeah. Oh, well, thanks for the encouragement.
Oh, for sure. I mean, you have, you know, 25 years of experience of watching it firsthand. I mean, and I know you'll have fun doing it. And I think you should do it, like, literally every show, make a point to do a joke.
I've done the last two shows, so I've got three more this week. So now you've motivated me, I'm going to make sure I do it.
Okay. If you have anything you want to send me, let me know.
Right. Okay. I'll get you.
Anytime. Well, thanks so much.
You see my fetish for fat men. I've got a whole routine about that.
That's great. Yeah, just do it. All it takes is to build. Well, they say to build an hour, it's what? It's 5 minutes a month.
Right.
I mean, you do. Your tour is about 11 days, about 2 weeks, and in that time, you guys do about what, 5 to 7 shows?
Yeah.
So yeah. I mean, yeah, if you're doing seven 5 minute sets, but you're not gonna do 5 minute sets yet. But if 7 shows a month and you try 2 jokes each show, you're gonna get, you know, in 2 months you'll have your solid 5 minutes.
That's true. Yeah.
Just do every one.
Coach.
Well, yeah, I just know from experience of, like, it seems harder than it is to build a set.
You know, when you get a bit older, it's remembering it that's the hard part.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that encourages me to always write new stuff.
I need to stop drinking completely and get every brain cell stepped back on again.
Oh, man, I don't know if I can do it. Well, thank you. I know it's early morning for you. It's late night for me, but... thank you for your time, and
lovely to see you again. And well, hopefully we will see you back in hell in the same show.
I'd love to come back. Next time I come back, I'd like to try to set something up, or maybe I can do London first, or on my way back I can do it.
Yeah,
if they're open again.
I've got a manager, a guy there. I'll hook you up with.
That'd be great. Yeah, I can do both on my way since you go anyway. But yeah, I'd love to do it again. Thank you so much for having me the time that you did. And it was so nice to see you, and I'm glad that we're keeping in touch, and I'm glad that the comics that I've sent you have worked out.
Brilliant. No, definitely. So, I will speak to you very soon then.
Okay, good luck. Have great shows this week. Thanks so much. See ya. You can go ahead and log off, and I'll do the outro with these guys. Thanks so much, Gail. See you next time. Guys, that was obviously that was Gail Chloe, who owns, well, with Duncan, she owns the Laughter Factory, which is the club that I did in Dubai, which you've heard me talk a lot about the last couple of months. So I wanted to have her on I wrote down a couple bullet points that I want to talk to her about, and we covered every one pretty much. I wanted to talk about how she got into her DJing background, how that turned into comedy, how did she end up in Dubai, and I'm glad that we were able to cover all of that in such a short time. And I really wanted to talk about my trip because, you know, I did have my, you know, pros and cons of my time in Dubai, but overall I'm glad I went, and every time I look back on it, so glad I went. And I actually do miss, you know, those guys that I worked with, and, you know, being on the road with them and stuff like that. I was homesick, but it was a lot of fun, so I'm glad that we got to talk about it. But it was something for me to look forward to, and to be honest with you, like I said, I was already gigging in 2021 since February, but getting booked in Dubai this past May, so it was only like February I did 2 gigs. I think March I maybe had one, maybe April I think I had 1 or 2 gigs, but then May I got 2 weeks booked in Dubai. You know, I was recommended to her by Jimmy Schubert, who did it a couple of years ago, and so thank you to Jimmy Schubert for always looking out for me. And but, you know, it was a great experience, and it really gave me something to look forward to when I was just coming out of a really dark depression during the pandemic, and me not being able to get on stage as much as I could. Really had its toll on me, and I've been a lot better since I've been on the road. Even though I'm still not 100% back, I would like there to be a point where I can hang out 3 to 5 nights a week again at a comedy club and hang, plus get on stage and try new stuff more often. But being on the road more is doing its job, and you know what? That Dubai gig at the time, getting booked in Dubai gives me something to look forward to. It, when I was down and depressed, and it gave me, like, this is the official comeback. Because, you know, that's like making it official that the world is opening. You know, I mean, I all I had to do was get a little test, and I had to go, and it was like official. This is it. This is something for me to work towards. It kept me going, picked me up a little bit, and it was a great experience. It was, I'm really glad that I did it, and I was really looking forward to, because their restrictions are a little less than ours. Like, their social distancing is not the same as our social distancing. So I'm looking forward to being in a big room packed with people performing again. And that's what got me through it. So thank you guys for letting me ramble on here. It was just a pretty good iconic thing for my career, iconic thing for the world. And I'm very thankful I got to do it. Very thankful to Gail and Duncan for having me. And I'd love to do it again in next year. Thank you guys for listening. Don't forget, if you want to see me live, August 2nd through 8th, I'm in Las Vegas, Nevada. So that's August 2nd through 8th. I'm there the whole week at the Stratosphere Hotel, performing at the LA Comedy Club, which is located in inside the hotel. And that's August 2nd through 8th. And then, after that, August 12th, I am coming back to Paso Robles, back by popular demand, August 12th. This time only doing one show, so make sure you get your tickets ASAP. Homeschoolpod.com, click on tour for all ticket sales. And then August 14th, I will be in Boston, Massachusetts, and I'm having Lee Syatt open for me, so that's going to be a lot of fun. So make sure, that one's super limited seating. Right now there's only one show. If it sells out, we might add a second one, and it only holds like 50 people. So guys, make sure you get tickets to that one soon. Tickets are available right now, homeschoolpod.com. Don't forget to get your Homeschool Podcast t-shirts, which is very helpful to us, especially when you get our Only Love Can Save the World shirt, which is in dedication to my tour this year, which is called the Only Love Can Save the World Tour. And on the back, right now, I have all the tour dates, including the past and the upcoming ones. So it's a really cool shirt to have, and a great souvenir if you were at or will be at one of the upcoming shows. Everybody, I'm Augustino Zoid. I want to give a big thank you to Gail for calling in 9 o'clock in the morning for her. It is now like 11 p.m. for me. I want to give a big thank you to all of you who continue to support this show. Don't forget that only love can save the world. I'm Augustino Zoida. This is Homeschool Podcast. See you next time.
Homeschool Podcast.
Homeschool.
The Homeschool Podcast. Why? Because he was homeschooled.
I don't want to do that.
No, okay.
I don't want to do that at all.